Hi, I'm Dr. Avanti Kumar Singh. In over 20 years of practicing both Western medicine and Eastern healing traditions, the most important thing that I've learned is that healing is a journey we take together. So on this podcast, I'll be demystifying Ayurveda and other integrated medicine, showing how these simple ancient practices are the keys to unlocking a healthy modern life. We are all healing catalysts because healing starts within. It starts with you, and it starts right now. This is a Soulfire production. Episode number 121. Okay, strap in everyone for an episode that is about to flip the script on sexual health and its huge impact on our overall well-being. Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to the Healing Catalyst podcast. I'm so excited to be with you here again today for another episode. And so today we're diving into the topic of sexual health, something that is vital to our happiness and our overall health, yet rarely discussed. And in fact, something that we often just whisper about, maybe with our, you know, close friends or family, but never really talk about it openly. And we really shy away from it, in fact. I know that this has been my experience, both in my upbringing as a South Asian woman and even in my training as a physician, which sounds really strange, but it's true. And it sounds so bizarre that I'm saying that to you, but it's really true. You know, beyond the education that I received in my medical training surrounding reproductive health and delivering babies, there was very little time spent on sexual health and its impact on our overall health. Which is why I'm so excited to have my guest today, Kamna Bhojwani, on the podcast. Kamna is a sexuality expert, a scholar, a coach, and a speaker who explores a wide range of topics through her work, from sex and relationships to spiritual growth and societal issues like homophobia, racism, and sexism. She holds two master's degrees, which is very impressive, one in spiritual psychology from Columbia University, where she studied sexual shame, and one in organizational psychology from the University of Illinois. Her work combines academic rigor with a deep love and compassion for being human, with all of its complexities. And Kamna's philosophy is simple, one that I really love, that nothing in the human experience is profane. So let's talk about it. In our conversation, Kamna and I discuss the impact of culture on sexual attitudes, highlighting the misconceptions and the miseducation that surrounds sexual health and the need for more accurate, fact-based education and shame-free information. Kamna also describes the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health benefits of maintaining a healthy sexual life. She also offers empowering advice on overcoming barriers and shame around sexual health, how to embrace our identities beyond societal norms, and the importance of integrating self-love in our journey toward sexual well-being. It's my hope that this episode will really open up your mind and help you consider that sexual health isn't just about what happens in the bedroom behind closed doors, that instead it's a vital sign of our health, body, mind, and spirit. So, get ready for a conversation that promises to be as enlightening as it is empowering. A conversation that brings sexual health out of the shadows and into the light to challenge our views. Let's dispel some myths, break some taboos, and maybe laugh a bit along the way. I'm so happy to share my conversation with Kamna Bhojwani about how sexual well-being is key to our overall health. Hello, Kamna. It's so nice to meet you. I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Avanti. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, well, it's great. I'm so excited to talk to you about a very, very necessary subject. And I have to tell you, when I got your name from someone to have you on the podcast, I was like, wow, it's a South Asian woman who is talking about sexual health. And that is not a very common thing. So I would love, we're both agreeing here. And so I was so intrigued, and I would love to just start out by you telling us a little bit about how you sort of ended up in this field talking about sexual health, especially as a South Asian woman? Like, how did that happen? Tell me about that.
Well, you think between the Kama Sutra and 1.5 billion people,
yes,
we'd be a little bit more amenable to talking about sex. But you're right, there is a lot of reticence around this topic in our part of the world. But you know, Avanti, what I've learned in my now 7-8 years of studying this is it's not dissimilar to other cultures. And I was actually lucky. I grew up in Bombay in a very progressive family. And it wasn't that, it wasn't like hippies and free love and all that kind of stuff. But there was a very powerful moment where my dad said to my sister and I, bring the boys home. And I tell this story often because at the time I was like, well, whatever, paying attention, not paying attention, being a teenager, whatever. That mindset, I think, is very much the foundation of why I do what I do, and I do it with such confidence. Because it was a very simple message to deliver to a teen. One is what you're going through is normal, and two is your safety is paramount. Not the what people are going to say or what we want to display in the world or some arbitrary morality that we're going to hold you to. It's just kind of like, this is life, this is nature, this is you, and go out and do big things. Like, this is not something to freak out about. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely powerful, I think, for me.
Yeah, sounds like it. I mean, that had to be, I'm just sitting here thinking about how that would be if I had had my father, my South Asian father. And I grew up here in the States. I was born and raised in the States. And, in some ways, we're supposed to be so progressive. I say this often. I was just actually in India in January, and I was talking to my younger sister, who's 2 years younger than me. And we were talking about the fact that, when our parents left India in the 60s, in the late 60s, India has been frozen in time for them. And so the way they brought us up here is so much more conservative in many ways than many of our cousins and our counterparts in India who have progressed with the time, right? And so for me, just hearing you say that your father was the one who said, bring the boys home, I'm just like, whoa. I mean, I can't even imagine what my life would have been like if that had happened for me.
Yeah, and I think that's a classic immigrant situation from that generation. It's different now because of the internet. And I'm sure you've seen the South Asian, this next gen is, they're out there breaking boundaries and pushing back. And for me, I've always got my eye on the content coming out of India. And there is for sure a sexual revolution going on there. And a lot of it has to do because of streaming, like streaming networks. They're not, Bollywood is, film is subject to a certain set of censorship that streaming is not. So I'm watching these stories and these boundaries just be dispelled in real time. And I'm so turned on, pun intended, by what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, my next question really is then, how do you see, culture being important in sort of impacting these conversations and attitudes towards sexual health, especially as a South Asian woman, having grown up in South Asia, in India? What do you think about that? How do you think culture impacts it?
So I make it a point as an academic to make sure that my data is very cross-cultural. Simply this, because like I just said, I grew up in India and I had a specific type of upbringing, which people would be surprised by. I've lived in America for ages and people are surprised by how conservative America is. I've lived in the UK, I've lived in Australia, and I think that we have more similarities than we think around our repression around sexuality. At the same time, there are certain cultural nuances that have to be paid attention to. It's not sort of a one size fits all. Like I'll tell you, for instance, in my research, I talk to Black men who are seriously tired of being fetishized around penis size, right? There's a certain story there. I talk to Asian women, same thing. So we have to understand that there's a common human experience around intimacy and bonding and love and connection. There's a common experience of repression around sexuality, more or less around the world. And while knowing that, we also have to understand that the on-the-ground implementation and execution has been a little bit nuanced, again, because of culture. So it's important to recognize that, because what I need as a woman, as a South Asian woman, as an immigrant in the US, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is a slightly different concoction from, somebody else who was born Irish Catholic in Ireland, right, for instance.
Mm-hmm. So interesting that you find that it's so similar in so many different cultures in so many different places. Because I have, you know, and again, I don't have the data. I've never actually looked into it. This is my own experience of, you know, in my South Asian community that I grew up in, it's just such a topic that is not talked about. And so I've always looked at it as like, oh my gosh, South Asians are so repressed. We don't talk about it. And so it's really interesting to me that you're saying that it's actually a universal issue.
Yeah, I mean, South Asians are, you know, we're one of those cultures that's very demonstrative about our religion as well. And, you know, sex is sort of on the other side of that. So we're a little bit more vocal, and I would say a little bit more hypocritical about it. But certainly every major religion of the world, Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, has some pretty firm and rigid norms around gender and sexuality.
Right, right. And so what are some of, I don't know if, which way I should go. I have two different questions I want to ask, and they're both in different directions. We'll talk about both of them.
I'm used to it. This spectrum is massive, right? When we're talking about all this.
Yes. Let's start here. What are some of the misconceptions, some of the common misconceptions that you see across cultures among most people about sexual health?
I think there's a lot of miseducation. So let's start just at childhood. Right. We're still, even in the US, I think only half of the states are required to provide sex education. And I think it's only 9 of those states are required to talk about consent. So we're talking about kids in 2024, who, by the way, have access to the internet and everything that they want to see, are being told, you know, sex is about abstinence and it's about preventing STDs and preventing pregnancy. It's a very sort of sex negative thing. You want to ask about a certain type of sex, you're curious, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's no avenue for it, at least not in a formal asking your parents, asking your teachers, asking your sex education counselor. So I think that's one of the issues. And by the way, you translate that to people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it's not like we're that much more willing to ask these questions, right? And now one demographic that I work with is women now menopausal, perimenopausal. I'm 45, I see the future very near ahead. A lot of women will say that they're very reluctant to ask their healthcare providers about how to maintain their sex life when their bodies are changing at that stage of life. So there are certainly, I mean, there are religious misconceptions. People think you go blind if you masturbate too much. That is absolutely inaccurate. So there's a lot of that nonsense that's still floating around. But more than those, it's the idea that we're not able to get accurate, fact-based, shame-free information.
Right. And so that goes back to sort of what we were talking about before, because there's a stigma, right? There is this fear of talking about sex, about sexual health. And so then you combine that with the fact that there's no education. It's sort of like this never-ending cycle, right? Because if people are feeling stigmatized about talking about it, they don't ask the questions, and then there's no one giving education. It just goes round and round and round. Right? I mean, that's what I'm sort of hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. So you look at it just from parents, right? You don't have to hit your kids on the head with, you know, this is how you do it. But we do see a couple of things. We see that parents who are uncomfortable and anxious around the topic make their kids uncomfortable and anxious around the topic. And parents, on the other hand, who just demonstrate healthy affection, physical affection with their partners, that, you know, that's a win right there. Like in our South Asian community, I interviewed a girl recently and she was like, you know, instead of the stories about how my parents were so successful, I wish they had told me the stories of how they were in love when they were in college and they would sneak off and my grandmother would sort of cover for them, right? I wish those romance stories that were still innocent and beautiful, I wish those were the stories that we were told. So that is part of it. The other thing is, you know, across the world, our healthcare system is still implicit in all of this, because you'll hear victims of rape saying that they were shamed when they went to the doctors looking for checkups. Same thing, like I just said about, you know, women in their 40s and 50s, they feel like they'll be shamed if they say, oh yeah, listen, doc, along with my hot flashes and my weight gain, I also want to make sure that I preserve the lubrication of my vagina. And they're like, oh my God, horrified to even have that conversation. So at every major institution carries some of this shame. It's quite profound, actually.
Yeah. So where do you think that comes from? I know that's a big question I just asked you. And I'm a physician and, you know, we learn about this in medical school. And are a lot of my colleagues really uncomfortable talking about sexual health? Absolutely. And at the same time, that's crazy because it's part of our system. It's our body, you know, and we're taking care of every other part of your body and your emotions. I mean, where do you think this comes from that you even have physicians who don't want to talk about sex?
Yeah. I mean, I won't say I was arrogant enough to think I could crack this in 2 years. I did my master's at Columbia studying sexual shame, and I tried to go there. I really tried to go into why and where and why we all so traumatized by something that should be so natural and is such an innate part of us. Like, what gives? It is the short answer. It is very complex. There are sociological, economical, anthropological, biological, everything. But fundamentally, I think it's this. Sexual energy is deeply powerful, which makes it scary, which makes it something that everybody wants to control. So from political organizations, sex education is not an education thing, it's a political thing. So from everyone from religion to politics to your parents to your, you know, your extended family, anybody that wants you to be regulated in a particular way will go for your sexual energy. And a lot of this was directed towards women. So my study of sexual shame, given that women are such social characters and shame is a great way to sort of to cut you off at the source, if you will. But I also study a lot of sexual shame in men now. And that's really fascinating as well. And we can go into that. So fundamentally, I would say this, we control it because it's powerful. Mm. All the more reason we need to liberate it, right?
Yeah. I love that you went there and said that, because actually that's been my theory for a long time, is that if you can, you know, really control people, this is the way you can control them. Because
absolutely,
the sexual energy is so strong. And in women, we create, you know, those of us who are, you know, biologically women, female, born that way, we have the ability to create that no other human beings do. Males don't have that, right? And so What other way than to control that energy, that creation ability, than to do this, right?
And I think that, you know, coming to misconceptions, and I don't want to get too philosophical here, you tell me. I mean, in Tantra, right, which is one of the oldest, most sophisticated integrations of spirituality and sexuality, this fundamental force, it is about unification. It is about the unification of Shiva and Shakti. It is about the unification of the masculine with the feminine. And we've gone and genderized it and polarized it such that men don't want to touch anything feminine in themselves. And women feel like they have to over-masculinize themselves to survive in this world. And if you ask me, is that why we're sick and isolated and inflamed and depressed? I kind of think so.
Yeah, it's such an interesting conversation about gender, sexuality, feminine and masculine, and how we use it in the West versus, you know, what feminine and masculine really mean. And that it's in all of us. So, I mean, that's a whole nother, we're going to do another whole episode on that. Because that's
absolutely
like a whole nother episode. But let's do this. We're going to rein it back in. And let's talk about, you know, sort of the topic that we wanted to talk about today, which is, you know, how does sexual health contribute to your overall physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health? And so, like, maybe let's go through that, you know, one by one, so we can just sort of have this episode be sort of a primer for people to really understand why sexual health is so important for our overall health. Would that be okay if we just do that? And we're going to go into all those other really esoteric conversations and discussions, because I think those are really, really important, on another episode. Is that a deal with you?
I agree.
Okay.
In your lifetime and mine, we will be scratching away at this. I'm sure it's massive.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's start with, you know, the physical health benefits. You know, what are some of the physical health benefits that are associated with maintaining just a healthy sexual life?
Sure. And let me just point out that I think it was the World Health Organization that declared something as recently as 2012. That, hey, guess what? Sexual wellness is related to overall wellness. And we're all like, oh, yeah, well, hallelujah, right? You're welcome. About time. So I think it's great to go there, because I think that we've forgotten that this is actually good for us. Part of it is the shame. Like, I know in my life, even though sexuality was such a big part of who I was, I felt kind of frivolous if I put it front and center, even in my relationships. You know, people always be like, oh, you know, sex is not the only thing in a relationship. Sure, it's not, but it's a bloody important component, right? So it's about finding that balance. So let's start, like you said, I like to look at sexuality and sexuality wellness in quadrants. So there's the physical component, there's a mental component, there's an emotional component, there's a spiritual component. And this is actually a model set forth by a sexuality researcher called Gina Ogden. She passed away recently. So if you look at it from there, from a physical standpoint, sure. I mean, sex is, it's a stress reducer. It is connected to better sleep. It is been connected to lower, you know, cardiac issues, just from a physical standpoint. I mean, it's fun and it makes you feel good, right? Fundamentally. Emotionally, it brings connection in a relationship. It brings, at a very biological level, you know, it's got oxytocin, the release of this bonding. Even, I think, masturbation, there are many, many, many benefits to masturbating. And one of the most important ones, I think, aside from just the release of stress and sleep and all of that, is just getting to know yourself, being able to pleasure yourself, knowing how that feels. I'll tell you a really interesting side anecdote. And I mentioned I work with men a lot. And this gentleman who had been married, been divorced, you know, just getting to know himself. He was like, you know, when a woman picks up a sex toy, we're like, rah, rah, all empowerment and stuff like that. But if a man picks up a sex toy for himself, then it's creepy. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Talk to me more about that. So he said, look, part of my self-love journey in this new phase of my life was I have date nights with myself. I take an edible, I put on some music, I play with my toy, and I really learn to re-love myself. And I thought that was so beautiful. And especially in the case of men where there's so much around performance metrics, how big, how long, how fast, how many, all of this kind of stuff. There's this like frenetic energy around sexuality. I thought that was such a beautiful message for a man to give other men. Kind of slow it down so you don't break it off. But that whole idea about self-pleasure just being a pathway to getting to know yourself. I mean, from a mental standpoint, we talked about the stress aspects. We're also talking about when you're laden with that sexual shame, it's actually been linked to body image issues. It's been linked to anxiety and depression. You're just kind of, you feel kind of worse about yourself if you're not able to connect, if you're not able to really stand in your skin. And it affects your one-on-one relationship with yourself. It affects your relationship with people. I would even venture to say that it affects your professional life, how you carry yourself and how you feel about yourself. So there are lots of different studies that show that there are multiple benefits. I mean, there was one study I saw that, you know, having good sex and a healthy sex life is better than prayer. And I was like, wow, better than prayer? That's, you know, there's a spiritual message for
you. I want to know how they measured that one. Just the researcher to me is like, I wonder what they did to measure
So that's the problem in the field, right? The sample sizes tend to be quite small. You have to isolate certain factors, all of those things. But the messaging is quite, you know, it's quite consistent. It's good for you. And one of the studies that I read was really interesting. And this is in the context of aging and sex. So 50, 60, 70s and above, whatever you call elderly these days, seniors, etc. And it was this. It was those who have more fulfilling sex lives are those who believe they deserve it. So if you believe that you are worthy in your life after a certain age of having that energy and that vitality and that pleasure, you are more likely to get it. That makes sense, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that that's true at any age. I mean,
I agree.
Right. Let's back up to, you know, teenagers, young adults who are, you know, college age, or, you know, when you're in that middle part of your life when maybe you're procreating and you know, working in your career and all that. I mean, I think it's true of any age, right? Because so many people don't feel that they deserve it or feel that it's not necessary for their well-being.
Absolutely.
Like it's a nice
job. I would agree with you. I would agree with you. And I think that's why one of my most popular topics is sexless marriages. And it's heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking. And that's exactly what I think is happening. I think people are not acknowledging the role and the importance of sexual well-being in their lives. I think they are prioritizing productivity and money. And look, I'm not saying that having a roof over your head and all of those things are important, but I think making time for intimacy and pleasure and leisure is, that's what you're going to live for. All that money that you're making, like it's not, at the end of the day, it's going to be a moot point if we're all sitting there literally isolated and inflamed.
Right. And, you know, I mean, what you're saying goes to such a bigger issue, which is that we, as human beings, but especially in the West, we are always so focused on productivity, doing more, getting more, having more, right? That is like the way those, that's the message that's given to us here. It's not about pleasure, leisure, relationships, right? And so this is more of the same. So sexual health comes right underneath that because it is about your relationship with others and your relationship with yourself and pleasure and intimacy, all the things that, you know, are deemed sort of secondary to productivity and doing more, getting more, being more, right?
You know what? It really irritates me. It's like, it gets me under my skin. The idea that around the US and India is becoming like this a little bit as well. The weekends have now been hijacked by sporting events. And I'm not anti-sports. My son's a competitive tennis player. I'm on board. But how can you, as a human being, expect to revitalize and regenerate yourself if you are literally going 7 days a week? It just, you know, when I see these parents, like they're in it, you know, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. sitting on the sports field in their little plastic chairs and stuff like that. I appreciate the dedication. I'm sure your kids appreciate that dedication, maybe, but I'm sure your kids would love to see you go home and cuddle up with your partner. I'll tell you, my parents, and I'm probably revealing more about my parents than they want us anybody to know, but heck, here we are. Growing up in Bombay, on Sunday mornings, their bedroom door would be locked till 10 a.m. Locked. And my sister and I would sit outside and do our own thing. And then we'd hear that click at 10 a.m. and we'd bound in. And then the rest of the morning was fighting over music, the Beatles versus New Kids on the Block or whatever was going on at that time. Today, I know that if, as a parent, if I'm able to signal to my children, my relationship is very important to me and it will get the time it deserves. And you are very important to me and you will get the time it deserves. I mean, that's a win.
That's amazing. I don't even know that I do that. That I've done that. I'm pretty liberal and progressive. I don't know that we've ever done that, had those boundaries.
It's very small signaling. Children are very smart, where what we say to them is much less powerful than how we model our lives.
Yeah. But I also think it's the open discussions at home also. I mean, my kids, you know, I have a 21-year-old and a 24-year-old. So, you know, they both have been educated really well. We've been very open about things. And so we talk about everything and talk about sexual health and talk about relationships, et cetera. I don't know that that happens in most households, especially in South Asian households. You know, even kids, my peers who have grown, you know, were born and raised here, I don't even know that they talk about it a lot. But that also could just be, you know, me being a doctor, understanding that it's all connected, yada, yada, yada. But I don't think that most of us really prioritize it. It's either the thing that you did to sort of make a statement about being a rebel when you were younger, and then you continued with that sort of mindset, or you just decided you're not going to, you're just going to, you know, shy away from it. And getting somewhere, like having a healthy medium is always, it has been hard. So what would you say to people, like, you know, how do you create that sort of, doesn't matter what age you are, because, you know, the people who are listening to this podcast could be in their 50s, they could be in their 20s, you know, what would you advise for people to start to do to sort of get to that middle place of where they understand that sexual health is so important for their well-being? And not be on one side or the other, because it's always about the extremes, I find. And that's where problems happen.
I agree. My answer is not, it's not easy. It is the first place you have to start is with your own sort of boundaries. Why does this make me uncomfortable? Right? And you don't have to answer it. You don't even have to overcome it. But you have to acknowledge it. Because let's face it, even as in every generation, there's going to be something that's going to rattle you. That should be the case, right? We should be moving. And, you know, like today, if you ask me, I'm learning from my kids. I'm like, oh yeah, your friend identified as a tree. That's interesting. Tell me more, right? And it's just showing curiosity instead of judgment. And that's why the sort of the self-excavation becomes very, very important, because you need to sit by yourself and be like, what is my true value system around premarital sex, sex in college? Well, all the things that your kids are probably experiencing now, you know, non-binary, trans, whatever, LGBTQ kids, whatever it is, you know, girls using tampons. The bar is so personal. Everybody's got a different threshold. So what is your threshold? What are the things that make you really uncomfortable? And can you, this is the important bit, can you set them aside so that what you can communicate to your children is openness and safety. We're not asking you to have all the answers. This is the critical thing. But what you need to portray is, I'm open to learning with you. If you can withhold judgment and you can withhold the voice of your mother or your father that might have crucified you, because many of us are holding on, especially in South Asian cultures, we're holding on to some ideal that some dead ancestor set forth for us, right? It's not relevant anymore. Everything has changed. So what is relevant for you today in the ecosystem of your children? And again, coming back to my dad and bring the boys home, all he did was show me that he loved me more than anything else, right? Because for a dad to tell their daughters, you know, bring them. Now, he tortured the hell out of them. He got his pound of flesh. You gotta love them more than you love your arbitrary morality. It's not easy. It's not to pick up a book and read it together. It's not as easy as that.
No, for sure. But then, you know, also, so that's great advice for those, you know, who are listening, who have children, you know, at any age, to sort of, you know, address these sort of barriers that they've put up for themselves and how they, in what they talk about with their kids. But what about, let's say, just, you know, me and you at our age? I'm 52, you know, you said you're 45. Like at our age, if we're struggling with sort of a lot of shame, I mean, you said that your research was on shame and sexuality. Tell me what do you suggest then? Like, what are some things that we can start to do to sort of get over the shame? Because I think we have to talk about that before we can even talk about how you can sort of improve your sexual health. First, you've got to even acknowledge that you need it, right? So how do we get over that, do you think?
So there is I always say, you know, this is an inside job. And for me, this is where the spirituality piece comes in, right? Because fundamentally, we are working to love ourselves in the deepest, most profound way possible, right? For me, it is divine. It is within us. It cannot be profane. So we may as well accept it. So the model around this, the theoretical model, is that you have to sit down with those voices in your head and figure out, whose voice is it? Is it relevant to me today? Do I want to keep it or do I want to discard it? Nobody's saying go in and toss out your entire childhood. That's not it. There's some stuff that is relevant. There's some stuff that you'll want to keep. But at our age, if you have the responsibility of driving, and if you can vote for the president of your country, you damn well be responsible for your own sexual identity, what you're internalizing, belief systems, etc. And that comes from excavation. Whose voice is that? Is this still relevant to me? And then if it's a voice that hurt you, and many of us had that, right? We were told to cover up, and we were told that, you know, mine was tone it down. I was constantly being told to tone it down, to the point where if somebody says that to me now, I have a gut reaction to it. Those people were trying to protect me. So for bonus points, if you can forgive them, then you're even further along.
Yeah.
So that's the first step. Whose voices are they? Do I want to keep this in my life?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really baby steps. For a lot of women, you know, it's our physical appearance. Something about it. We're either not dressing our age, or, you know, in Hindi, the randi or thandi, frigid or slutty, whatever those options, kind of discarding those binaries and sitting in the space of where you want to be.
It's a lot of internal processing. And I think, you know, the key also to make sure people think about is that, you know, you can't always do this by yourself. You can start the inquiry, but you may need some help along the way, because this can open up a lot, right? It can open up a lot for people about when you start talking about whose voice is it. It can be related to so many things in life.
Absolutely. Right? These are all very interconnected messages, right? And you can certainly, if you have the practice and you have the luxury of getting help, certainly a powerful sisterhood is, I think we are in the age of, I don't know, the future is female. I think the past has been female. I think that, you know, it's time for that resurgence of the real nourishing and grounding that women can do for one another. And frankly, that women can also do for men. Because I kid you not, men are waiting to shed the weight of these boxes, this toxic masculinity, this male aggressor, this, like I said, these competitive metrics around sexuality. So yes, finding the right people that can help you do that, safe spaces. But honestly, for me, Avanti, and it's not, like I said, this is not a 1, 2, 3 fix and done thing. That spiritual component is very, very, for me, that's really the secret sauce. And that's, I'm writing that book. I'm writing Sex, Shame, and Spirituality. And it's three, for me, it's three very different things that separates sexuality from, sorry, separates religion from the spirituality piece that we need to pay attention to. One is religion is sort of socially driven. This spiritual piece is personal. It is your personal relationship with the divine, whether that is nature or it's a particular deity or it's, you know, an animal or it's music, art, whatever. So it is very, very personal. The second is religion is prescribed in a sense. We've gotten it from the Bible. It gets passed down through the Gita, the Quran, whatever. Spirituality is intuitive. It comes from that internal. So when you sit down and have that questioning with yourself, that curiosity, that questioning around whose voice is this? Where did I learn this? Your answer will likely come from within you. And it'll be a non-judgmental answer. It'll just sort of help you split through. And then the last thing is, you know, and we talked a little bit about this division, virtue, vice, body, flesh, spirit, good, bad, all of that. That doesn't exist in a spiritual paradigm. That, you know, it's about the unification, like we talked about Shiva Shakti. So when you think about, there is no difference between my spiritual desire and my divine presence. I mean, that's the holy grail, right? That's where you want to be. So yes, the community piece, Brené Brown talks about this, right? The antidote to shame is finding your communities of belonging. Absolutely. But I would add to that, that if you're constantly externally referenced, you'll still always be at the mercy of somebody else's belief system. So you've got to ground into something of your own.
Right. And so you brought something up. I want to tap into something that you just said, is that you're writing this book about sexuality, shame, and spirituality. Tell me again, mm-hmm. and I know you've said it a couple of times, but how are you connecting for the broader audience? Because I understand this as a South Asian woman, right? And coming from the spiritual traditions, or even the religious traditions that we've come from, understanding that connection. But how do you explain these three things, is like how they're connected? You did a little bit of that just now, but let's dig in a little bit more.
Fundamentally, it's this: accepting your sexual identity, your sexual desires, your sexual needs, your expression of it is the fundamental understanding that the divinity that you seek outside is within you. So if the divinity is within you, and the sexuality piece is within you, how can they be separated? How can it be anything other and anything shadowed? And there are templates for this, again, in every major religion, in Sufism, in Christian mysticism. And we don't necessarily need to go there. All we need to do at an everyday level is not vilify ourselves for something that is very natural, just because some parent, some priest, some teacher, some lover told us that it was wrong or it was bad or it was shameful. So all I'm advocating for is reclaiming it for yourself, instead of letting it be so driven by a culture that we know was meant to manipulate us. We know this was intentionally and systematically implemented for control.
Right.
And I'm not a big fan of control. I don't know about you.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I mean, thank you for making that very sort of really, you know, honing in on what the connection is. Because I think that's really important, you know, for us to understand this perspective. Because I think it's a really, really important one, because it's about the control, it's about the power. And it's about, from what I'm hearing from you, it's about reclaiming that power for yourself, right? When you rewrite how you think about your sexuality and your sexual health and where are those messages coming from, right? You're rewriting and taking back that power, is what I'm hearing.
And look, we talk about what you and I, you know, in our 40s and our 50s, we're in such an ageist culture, right? You couldn't pay me to be in my 20s again.
I
had fun and all, right? But I knew it. I was so driven by what other people think and by these ideas of what I should be. Am I supposed to be slutty? Am I not supposed? How much is too much? And legs together, legs apart, all of that kind of stuff. And the beauty, of course, of what I do, and I mean, like I said, we're all works in progress, right? As I heal myself, I heal others and vice versa. I mean, I stand taller in my 44-year-old body now than I did in my 24-year-old body. And it's got nothing to do with the stretch marks and whatever, the changing shape. It just has to do with the essence that I will do nothing but love. Because if I'm not going to love myself wholeheartedly, how can I expect anybody else to do it?
Right. And that's a bigger, you know, conversation as well. That's hugely, hugely connected to this. I mean, you know, one of my questions was, you know, how does sexual health influence the health of our relationships? And I think that's sort of what you're getting at, right?
I mean, the communication, it's as simple as that, right? If I'm too ashamed to know what I like, how can I communicate what I like? How can I expect somebody else telepathically? Because they're not. Yes, you can be connected, but let me tell you, like, they would like some guidance, men and women and everybody in between. So it's just stuff like that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So let's bring it down. And I always like to, you know, spend the last part of the podcast episode, you know, really making it actionable and sort of tangible for everybody so that they can walk away from the episode really feeling like, okay, let me try doing this, or let me see how this would apply to my life. So for anyone who's looking to improve their sexual health, where do they start? What can they start doing today? What would you say? Pointers, two or three that you can think of.
Yeah. So I would start with curiosity. I would start noticing how you feel. And I'm a huge fan of sensuality, engaging your senses. Start engaging in things that just that tickle you, right? I love the term glimmer, right? You've seen that there's a trigger and now there's a glimmer, right? So look for those glimmers and see which of your senses are being engaged. Because what we're doing is we're calling in some of this erotic energy, right? And sexuality is so much bigger than sex. It's how we engage with energy around us. So you could be cooking and using your hands. You could be walking in nature. I mean, sunshine, oceans, mountains, whatever it is that turns you on. And I think that's the key phrase. Notice the things that turn you on. Let's just start there. Because my hunch is that many of us have even forgotten how to be turned on by life in general.
Oh, for sure.
So I would just start there. And if I can make a book recommendation that's related to this, Thomas More, one of my favorite authors, wrote a book called The Soul of Sex. Thomas More, if you remember, was a monk. But even he talks about the importance of this sort of sexual energy and self-correcting in terms of this morality piece. So it's a beautiful book that I would recommend everybody read. But most importantly, just try and figure out how to turn yourself on again.
Okay. Great, great idea. And we will link that book in the show notes for sure. So I'll make sure that gets linked. Right. What else would you say? What would be the next step?
I mean, if we're ready for it, I think you really need to go into self-pleasure. You have to figure out how to make yourself feel pleasure and then how to communicate it. If you're in a relationship, toys or the internet, there are just many, many different ways to do it. But I think fundamentally, there are just too many women out there and men who just, you know, have been under pressure to touch themselves from the time they were very young, and women have the opposite problem. So everybody go back, go and find your balance. Find really what and how to connect with yourself so that, you know, you may have to communicate it to somebody else and you'll be able to. But more importantly, you just know what you like. So that's one, starting small with the sensuality piece. Getting deeper into knowing yourself. And then the third one, I would say, if you are in a relationship, is to consider the courage to communicate something new. And I would say this into one is a relationship that's a romantic relationship. I would also challenge you to talk to your healthcare provider about sexual health, especially if you're at that age where it might be something that's concerning you. And this is for men as well. Andropause is real, right? A drop in testosterone. Dr. Manthi, you can tell us about that. And if it's bothering you, bring up the conversation with somebody you can trust and see what's out there. There are options. Mm-hmm. And they're more and more every day.
Yeah, I think this is such an important point. All of the points you made, but especially about talking, communicating with your partner, but especially communicating with your health providers. You know, this is a conversation that's really happening among women who are, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, entering menopause, perimenopause, because this is becoming an issue. And I think there's more and more women who are health providers, physicians, especially, who are speaking out about this and saying it's not okay. It's not okay that the only thing we talk about is, you know, hot flashes and bone loss, and we don't talk about vaginal dryness or, you know, loss of libido and how important that is for your overall wellness and health. So I think that it's really important.
What's also really interesting, because I do a lot of sex tech advocacy and advising, similarly, these female entrepreneurs sitting in Silicon Valley are now that age. So we're beginning to see more companies that are providing services and products to address this need, which is super, super exciting. Now, are we going to get them funded? That is also another episode.
Right, exactly.
But they're out there fighting the good fight.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Actually, that was one of the health trends for this year or last year. I can't remember. I do this interview with Well and Good every year with the editors. And one of them was that sexual health was coming to your Target, CVS, drugstore, whatever you want to call it. Like there are all of these products are now in the aisle because there is this understanding that sexual health is really important, but it's also big business. Let's not lie. I mean, we're all
absolutely.
The consumers want it, right? So I think that's super important.
Absolutely. I'm hoping the prices will come down soon. But again, we'll be funding and companies being able to scale. Because there are right now, I think a lot of these products are at a very premium price and they need, you know, we need to make it more accessible to everybody. But yes, they're on the shelves, Nordstrom, Target, they're coming if they're not already.
Yeah, they are. Let me ask you one question about that so that people, you know, because again, where we get our information is always so varied and people are afraid to ask questions. So let's just ask the question, what are some of the products that are some of the ones that you suggest? Or, you know, that you can share or if there's like a resource page on your website or something that people can go to.
Yeah, I'll share high level some of the product. Not so much the brands, but okay, so I'll give you an example. I actually just did a post about a vibrator called the Lioness. And what I liked about the Lioness, obviously it's female funded. What I liked about it, a female founded, and actually they're self-funded. What I liked about it is that it gives you information. So coming back to point two about getting to know yourself, if you're a woman using this vibrator, it will tell you, you know, the length of your sessions, how long it takes to get to an orgasm. And I thought it was really interesting. Of course, I'm experimenting with this stuff. I was really interesting to see, you know, what a morning session looked like for me versus an afternoon session. This makes it sound like I sit around and masturbate all day, but keep in mind, this is part of my work, so I'm quite fortunate. But, you know, versus when you're stressed. And if you're really wanting to know yourself, I thought that was great. But of course, there are a gazillion products. And the nice thing is that the experience of going shopping for sex toys is not like it was in the 70s where it was like a hole in the wall and it was like a dark room and you'd have to come out and like sanitize. I mean, I'd still recommend you come out and sanitize in a post-COVID world. But they're actually really fun. And big cities have some very beautiful stores that you can go to. So I would recommend just going ahead and playing with them. In terms of categories, sure. There are all sorts of vibrators, dildos, things you can insert into various orifices. They're great fun for stimulation, you know, anal penetration to see if that's something that you like. I would, you know, you can play with all of those things. I like that there are a gazillion different types of lubes because again, that is something, lubrications, that is something that is very private, very personal in terms of what you'll react well to. And there's everything from hemp to CBD to blueberry, you name it. My house is like a pop-up shop because I have all these various samples here. So you can play with them. And then the third thing that's really interesting, at least in California, because of course cannabis is legal here, but they are seeing links between cannabis and sexual well-being. I suspect it has something to do with the inhibition piece, kind of getting out of your head. It has something, it does help with lubrication, some have said. So that's a really sort of, if you're in that edible space, that is also something that you can consider. So those three categories I'm finding really interesting.
Okay, great. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. So I know that we're coming up on time here. So I just want to ask you like one other question, which is, you know, if you had one message to tell listeners regarding sexual health and their overall well-being, what would it be?
It literally is what my tagline is this: nothing inside you is profane. So you need to start accepting the divinity of your sexuality to really lead that big vital life that you were born to lead. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I just have a couple other like speed round questions, just fun questions to ask you so that people can get to know you a little bit better. Are you game?
Yeah. Sure,
okay,
it.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Complete this sentence. Sexual health is?
My life's work.
Amazing. What is one myth about sex that we need to change?
Size matters.
Love that. Something that people often get wrong about you.
That I'm having sex all the time. I'm talking about sex all the time.
You're talking about it all the time, but you may not be doing it. Love it. What's something that most people don't know about you?
If I wasn't, they probably know this, but if I wasn't doing what I'm, if I wasn't such an academic, I would be on stage singing my little heart out for the rest of my life.
Yeah, you like to sing? Is that one of your hobbies?
Music is my life. Yeah, music. Amazing. I've been singing and dancing since I was born.
Okay, that's great. That's amazing. I have a lot of singers and dancers in my family too. So my husband, my kids. Yeah. So there's a lot of that going on here too.
Kind of people.
Yeah. What's one thing that you're really excited about right now?
I'm really excited about the potential of these new technologies with AI to deliver sex education to people who need it. There's a lot of potential for misuse. Sorry. I just want to say that.
No, please.
If we channel our energies for good, I think young kids who have a lot of questions will be able to get them answered right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's all about making sure that the information is correct, right? But that's true, you know, in the world that we're in at any level. So not just an AI.
Curation is the name of the game, right?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. What is one thing that you're deeply grateful about right now?
I'm grateful that I have the courage to do what I do. We talked about it, right? I kind of, kamna means desire. So maybe there was something bigger at work here, but it's not easy to be knocking on doors every day and being like, hey, you want to talk about sex? And most people will say no, but I'm not deterred. I just keep talking. So I'm very grateful for that tenacity.
Yeah. I'm grateful that you're doing this work too. It's really important. What book is on your nightstand right now?
The Kama Sutra. I'm not kidding. I was like, it's been a while. I need to go back. And I mean, it's layers and layers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the last time I read it was probably 20 years ago. Okay. So I thought I would go back and finger through it.
What is a song that you're listening to on repeat right now?
Oh my God. Right now I'm listening to Sensational by Chris Brown.
Okay.
Like I said, I need to move.
Yeah. Awesome. That feels like a good place for us to end our conversation. I just have one last question that I always ask my guests. If I offer up the phrase to catalyze healing, what comes up for you?
It sounds so cliche, but it really is self-love. This really comes down to nothing. It's not othering yourself. When you don't other yourself, you don't have to other other people either. And then that takes us to war and peace and all the rest of that.
Kamna, thank you so much for doing this podcast episode. Thank you so much for being here today. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Avanti. It's been great. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you're so welcome. And we will do it again. We have a lot of other esoteric conversations to have. So you'll be back.
At least five from what I counted.
Yes, at least. Thank you so much for doing this. Thanks again for listening to The Healing Catalyst. If you love what you heard, please hit follow and pass it along to a friend. And if you're feeling really inspired, please rate and review so that others can find this podcast more easily. To learn more, head to avantikumarsingh.com. And to connect with me directly, find me on Instagram at avantikumarsingh. I'll be back next week and hope that you will be too. Until then, remember, with the right catalyst, you have the power to activate your own healing. Because healing starts within.